Blog Talk Radio.
If you're a veteran of Iraq or Afghanistan, like me, coming home can be harder than expected, but it turns out I wasn't alone.
At IAVA.org, there's a free online community of thousands of vets who've got your back. Whether it's managing the transition home or everyday stuff
like finding a nice sweater for my dog.
Sweater?
Okay, maybe not that. Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America is there for you. Join our community at IAVA.org.
We've got your back.
Brought to you by IAVA and the Ad Council.
Good morning, and welcome to the second half of Saturday Mornings with Joy Keyes. I'm your host, Joy Keyes. I want to thank you so much for tuning in. You can follow me on Twitter.com/Joy Keyes, and you can become a fan on Facebook. Just look up Saturday Mornings with Joy Keyes. Also, send me an email. I would love to hear from you. My email address is SaturdaysWithJoyKeyes@hotmail.com. Well, today I'll be speaking with author Tanya Bianc. She's an author and journalist. Her latest book, Undaunted, The Real Story of America's Service Women in Today's Military. She is also the author of Army Wives, The Unwritten Code of Military Marriage, and that's the basis for Lifetime's TV hit series, Army Wives. She serves as a consultant for the show, and it's one of the number one rated drama series. So today we're going to be talking about four women she writes about in her book. I'm going to reach out to her and give her a call. If you're listening, you can call in. The call-in number is 646-929-0368. I would love to hear from you and get your opinion. If you know somebody who's in the services, a woman, feel free to call and tell her story and share what's happened, or maybe a vet. Hi, good morning, Tanya. This is Joy Keyes.
Hi, good morning, Joy. How are you?
I'm wonderful. We're on the air and excited to talk to you this morning about your great book, Undaunted.
Oh, thanks so much for having me, Joy.
Well, you did a great job. You really gave an inside or a bird's eye view of what it's like to be a woman in the military. You delved into different armed services, the Army, the Marines, and different levels, women at different levels, at different ranks, I should say, and the different issues that they were going through. How long did it take you to write this book?
I got the idea for the book back in 2008, and I started working on it in 2009. It's been several years. It was not an easy project to put together, and so I feel really great though about how the book turned out, and it's just been very exciting.
I want to read a quote. This is in the beginning of the book. It says, "I believe that it is as much a right and duty for women to do something with their lives as for men, and we are not going to be satisfied with such frivolous parts as you give us." How did you go about deciding on choosing that quote for the beginning of the book?
Yeah, I thought that service women, if you look at the military culture and military men tend to be traditional, and then you add into the mix these unconventional service women into this environment, into the subculture, and that's one of the reasons why I chose that quote, because these women believe that they can fight, defend, and lead our nation in battles despite conventional wisdom. And they really are going against traditional gender norms that we have in our society still to this day.
Oh, definitely. And I see the fight that they had. Let me just mention to the audience, you have four women that you followed, Brigadier General Angelina Salinas, Second Lieutenant Bergen Flanagan, Sergeant Amy Stokely, and Major Candace O'Brien. And all their stories are different and yet similar. One of the stories that really touched me was Candace's story, because I'm a mother, and her trying to juggle. It's hard juggling as a single parent, just non-military. I'm a civilian. But then the parts where she was trying to get them to daycare, then she was being called out of class. I mean, I just felt like she was drowning. I mean,
right.
Talk to me about when you were interviewing her and
right.
the feeling that you got from her.
Yeah, and her, the interesting thing about her story, her story was unfolding in real time as mm-hmm. I was researching her story and interviewing her. These events were unfolding, and it was to the point where it affected her physical health. She, you know, she wasn't eating right. She wasn't taking care of herself because she was trying to take care of everybody else, like most moms do. You know, you end up putting yourself last, and she was putting her children and her husband and her job first, because the military is a very, very demanding profession. You know, we talk about in the civilian community, can women have it all? But when you apply that question to military women, can military women have it all? It's kind of a different answer, because the military mission must come first above all else. You can't just turn down a deployment to Afghanistan because you happen to have a 12-month-old baby at home, or you have other issues going on in your life where it's just not a convenient time. You can't just give your 2 weeks' notice and change jobs in the military. You would be court-martialed and put into jail if you did not deploy, you know, with your unit. Not even with deployments, but also just with training. You can't just say, oh, that's an inconvenient time. I can't go into what we call the field, where they go into the woods for training for 2 weeks.
Well, that's one of her issues. You know, she's dealing with this, trying to juggle all these things. Let me just read a little part here in her section where she's pregnant. It says, like most Army women, Candace wanted to put off wearing the Army maternity uniform as long as she could physically stand it. The ACU maternity duds held a stigma that no one talked about openly, but that everyone had an opinion about. The tent-like design flattered no one, and on a subconscious level, since ACUs were designed and worn by those going into the field or into battle, when soldiers spotted a woman wearing the maternity version, it was as if they had seen a man wearing a tutu. So there's even in what I think it was her or someone else was told, don't get pregnant while you're on command, and then she got pregnant. Was that Candace, or
That was Candace, yes. Her platoon sergeant years earlier when Candace was new to the military, she had graduated from West Point, and she was, I believe she was a platoon leader. Her platoon sergeant gave her that advice as a warning, don't get pregnant when you're in command, and she took that to heart. She agreed with that advice. However, as events
unfolded, Murphy's Law, that's what that's called.
That's what happened to her, and it was tough. It was not easy on her being pregnant and being in command.
One of the you do have some funny parts in the book. It's not all serious and gray or tan, or so to speak. General Angelina Salinas. I mean, she's a wonderful character in a sense, but a wonderful human, it seems, very well-rounded, and doesn't seem, as angry. She seems happy and enjoyed what she was doing. But one of the funny parts was she was in civilian clothes with, was it Major Woods, I think, her right-hand
Sergeant
guy?
Sergeant Major Woods.
And they were at this lunch or something, and she went over to the young servicemen, and she was talking, and the guy started rambling off about women in the military and they shouldn't be in the military, and she let the guy go on, and then finally, you know, the Major Woods had to step in, like, do you know who you're freaking talking to? You know, I was dying reading that part, Tanya. I was like, ooh, he's going to get it.
Yes, and Sergeant Major Woods knew when he looked over at his boss, General Salinas, he could tell by the look in her eyes that this was not going to turn out well for this young infantryman who kept going on and on about why women shouldn't be in the infantry and why they weren't real Marines. And here he was talking to the commanding general of the of the recruit training depot out there in San Diego. So
why don't you tell the audience a little bit more about what Angelina Salinas was doing in San Diego and what that meant in a historical sense, her position?
She definitely broke through the glass ceiling in that job. When she became a brigadier general, the commandant of the Marine Corps assigned her out in San Diego, where she was the first woman to ever serve in that position as the commanding general of recruit training out there in San Diego. And the interesting thing about the training out there is that it's all male. The Marine Corps is the only service branch to still segregate their training by gender. And so if you live west of the Mississippi River and you're a male, you're going to go learn to become a Marine. Your boot camp is going to be out there in San Diego. And so she had, you know, tens of thousands of male recruits that go through that training every year, you know, more than 500 male drill instructors, no female drill instructors there. And here she is. She's the very first woman, and there was a lot of resistance when she arrived. Before she got there, they already knew she was coming, and people were not very happy about it. Even though they knew little about her, they were discriminating against her just because she was a woman. And
yeah, the Major Woods was getting phone calls, and he didn't know what to say or how to handle it. But at the end, and that was a tearjerker moment. Oh my God! And she was such a little jokester to cut the air. But at the end, when I don't want to give away what happened. Let me not talk that part. I will focus on, though, Angelina Salinas, and let's talk about the issue of the trauma that happens to service women in duty. Some of your characters experienced that firsthand, Bergen being one of them. That was I felt like I was there. The way that was written, I'm not going to say what happened to her, Bergen's character, but when you get to that point in the book, you're like holding, like my hands were like, you know, denting the pages because I was like praying, you know, for a certain outcome. Mm-hmm. So I'm not going to give it away because I want you guys who are listening to pick up Tanya's book, Undaunted, so you can find out what happened to Bergen. But they're all experiencing different types of traumas. As you mentioned with Candace, her eating, she lost like 12 pounds. Officer Angelina Salinas, her back pain for 5 years. She was putting up with sciatic pain because in the military you cannot afford to look weak. And then already you're a woman, so you have like these two notches against you. You know, you're a woman, and then you're going to have a medical issue. Like, we're done. We're like washed up. Like, talk to me about your interactions with the women and the different physical, also mental trauma and stress that they had to deal with.
Yeah, and I think that's why the title of this book is Undaunted. Those are the very issues that you just mentioned, Joy. That's why the book is named Undaunted, because, you know, no one in the military, like you said, wants to be labeled as weak. Man or woman, that's the worst label because it's a general term in the military, and it describes your overall appearance, your overall performance. It includes things like your physical fitness, are you in shape, your leadership style, your military bearing, how you lead, how you can get things done. And a lot of women, they're already labeled weak. They've got to prove that they're not weak, whereas a man might be given the benefit of the doubt that he's not going to be weak. So when you talk about these medical issues, your top tier of service women, what I mean by that are that your squared away service women who are very sensitive to how they are being perceived at all costs. They do not want to be labeled as weak. But what happens when you have a serious medical condition, like you said, with General Salinas, who, you know, she had had five knee surgeries. She needed to have back surgery. I mean, she was going to, it was so bad, she was going to get out of the Marine Corps years earlier when she was a lieutenant colonel. Rather than tell anyone in the Marine Corps why she was getting that she was having the pain, she never told anyone, which is remarkable to me. But she did not want to be labeled as weak. Now, obviously, she didn't get out, which is a part of her story in the book. But even to this day, she still is in pain. You know, she would never show that to anybody.
Well, I think that's the face of the military, is that you can't, again, going back to the weakness part. Let's talk about Amy. She was a cute, she probably would kill me if I'm saying cute, but, you know, she was one of the younger service women. Let me see, I think we have a caller here. Let me check in. You're calling from 718 area code. Did you have a question? Hi, did you have a question? Okay, I guess they're just listening. That's fine. If you do want to call in, the call-in number is 646- 929-0368. We would love to hear from you. We're talking about women in the military with author Tanya Bianc, her book Undaunted. You can also check out her website, tanyabianc.com, B-I-A-N-K, .com. So Amy's story was really inspiring. I want to join. Like, Amy made me want to join. I was like, I'm 40-some years old. I don't want to go in a minute. But her, somehow, she really inspired. I was like, wow, this sounds cool. Like, I want to do this. Yet she also experienced some trauma. But with Amy, let's talk about how her family supported and perceived her. You know, her family, some of them didn't want her to go into it.
Right. What's really, what stuck with me is a conversation that Amy had with her mother, and this was when she was out of high school, had just graduated, and she told her mom that she was going to join the Marine Corps, and her mom was just beside herself because Amy had this other great job in her town.
Going to pay for her college education,
yes,
everything.
It was a wonderful job, and her mother was just shocked when Amy said, "Oh, I'm gonna join the Marines." And her mom's like, "What? What?" And Amy said, "Remember, Mom, what you told me? You didn't want me to, you know, wake up when I'm 40 years old and have any regrets." And and another interesting thing that Amy had said that stuck with me is that she was afraid of not doing exactly what she wanted to do. She was terrified of not doing exactly what she wanted to do, and that was part of her personality. I think some people, you know, it's easy to get comfortable in life or in your job and, you know, just kind of stick with that. But with
complacent, in a sense.
But with women like Amy, she was terrified of being complacent and not always kind of, I guess, being out of your comfort zone.
She really pushed herself because she re-enlisted, and then the scene where she's driving back to actually go to a drill instructor training, she said in the book, like, every step that she would make, every bridge, so to speak, she would cross, she is like, what the heck am I doing?
Yes.
Basically, I'm throwing myself back in with the wolves to get beat up, remolded, and then be mean to other people and beat them up and remold them. And one of her things was, the meaner, the louder that you could be at the new recruits, the better you are. She was determined to be the loudest, to the point where I think she mentioned some other officer above her who was her boss, like, had lost his voice, because when he was a drill instructor, his voice became raspy because of yelling so loud at the recruits, you know. I think that was, but she definitely, I wanted to do it. I would be scared, but somehow I was like intrigued to do it, you know.
Joy, I didn't mean to interrupt. The interesting thing about Amy Stokely, Sergeant Amy Stokely, is that she wanted her female recruits to remember that they were women. She wanted them she wanted to turn them into not only good Marines, but good women. And she would, she would say, yes, we are Marines, yes, we are drill instructors, but first we are women, not men.
And she wore fake nails, and one of the, I was like, when you had that scene, and eyelashes, I said, oh, my God, I love this lady. I love her.
Yeah, that's right. She had acrylic French tip nails, which were within regulation. They couldn't be any longer than a quarter inch from the tip of the nail, because they're in the military.
And she measured. She measured to make sure.
She measured to make sure, you know. And you know, she had no problem, you know, making her recruits cry one minute and making sure her lipstick's on right the next minute, you know. So just a fascinating person.
One of the other issues you deal with is that for women in the military, marriage, the issue of marriage is a real challenge, because in traditional civilian life, women can work and they can have a husband and kids and go back and forth. But when both parents, the husband and the wife, are in the military, a lot of times the wife is at home, the caretaker, she's a stay-at-home mom. But when the wife is in the military, she can't be the stay-at-home mom. So all these emotions of, I'm not a good enough mother, I'm not a good enough wife, and then when am I going to see my spouse? And when I see my spouse, he has post-traumatic stress disorder.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And yeah, Joy, and you're talking about what happened in Major Candace O'Brien's family. There was a lot of double standards. And one example, and I do mention this in the book, when Candace is getting ready to deploy for the second time to Afghanistan, she's got a 2-year-old and 4-year-old. You know, her husband's got PTSD, just a lot, and she's got this really hard job on top of it all, you know, and she's going to be away for an entire year. And people, both people that she knew and also strangers, would say to her, how can you do this? How can you leave your 2- and 4-year-old behind? And sometimes mm-hmm. it was set out of pity, sometimes it was set out of scorn. And to Candace, it was like, well, this is my duty, I have to go. And I wonder, I think that society would treat this incident very different if they were talking to a serviceman, a father who was deploying, who had a 2- and 4-year-old.
Homemaking is a woman's job. Even today, right. 2012, I just had a previous guest on, Stacey Muhammad. She did a film about, she's doing a web series about prison reentry called Redemption for Color Boys. But one of the issues she deals with is, you know, who's responsible for the kids? It's kind of brought up that the woman is at home. She doesn't really specifically say this, but it's a mom at home taking care of the kids while the dad was in prison for 8 years.
Right.
Nobody right. really blinks. Now, if the dad was taking care of the kids and the woman was in prison, you know, there would be some different, like, he would be exceptional. He would be above and beyond. Oh, wow, you're such a good dad. You're
right.
taking care of your kids. You know,
yeah.
that's the same thing with being away for 9 months in Afghanistan. You're a woman. You're, like, horrible. What are you doing? But if it was
yeah.
a man, you know, he's got to go. That's just what he has to do.
Yes, she faced scrutiny. She did face scrutiny for because I think people looked at it because she was a woman that this was her choice to deploy for a year, whereas a service
mm-hmm.
man, it would be like, well, this is his duty and sacrifice for his country, and he's doing that, and isn't this an admirable thing he's doing, whereas
right.
the service women, they're not all, I mean, it depends. They're not always granted that. It's not looked at in the same way, necessarily, with
no.
mothers. You know.
I want to read some statistics a little bit. I want to read some statistics. This is from Rutgers Institute for Women Leadership. At the top level, general admiral, there are 11 in the Army. Only one is a woman. There are none in the Navy, Marine, or Armed Forces. That's the top tier. For lieutenant general, vice admiral, there are 52 in the Army. There's one woman. In the Navy, one woman out of 42. In the Marine, 0 out of 17. And the Air Force is 1 out of 39. So there are ceilings that still have not been broken. I think the Air Force, based on this report, had the most women percentage-wise based on the numbers. But the Marines being, you know, the least of these. One of the interesting things, just little minor things that women have to deal with in the services, for one of them is the uniforms. They're not created for them.
No, not in the Army.
It's the
ACUs. Now they're dress uniforms, yes. They're
right.
they're cut for a woman, and then sometimes there are you know, there's skirts and things like that and their own kind of shoes, depending on what they're wearing. But in the Army with their ACUs, which is their utility uniform, the camouflage one that they that's the one you see on TV when they're in Afghanistan wearing. In the Army, that is a male uniform. The Army is looking at fielding a female version of it finally. But it's funny, Joy, that you bring that up, because I asked when I discovered that, I asked my sister, who's been in the Army for 23 years, I said, how does it feel to be wearing, you know, you're wearing a man's uniform? And her
mm-hmm.
answer was, oh, I've always thought of it as being more as a unisex uniform. And it made me laugh. Because
yeah.
that's the kind of attitude you have to have. Like, I'm going to be in the Army because I have a right to be here if I'm a woman.
Regardless.
And so that's how she viewed it, which it made me laugh when I heard her say that. But
let's mention that your sister is up there. She's a colonel.
She is. She's a colonel, and she's a brigade commander right now.
Wow. And what have you seen in her rise? Do you mind sharing some of her issues that she had to deal with in her
lives. No, and really she was, you know, one of the inspirations behind this book, because I knew what she has faced over the last 23 years, her rise from lieutenant all the way up to colonel, and we share many of the same friends, female friends who are in the military as well, and I've seen what they have gone through, and so I was already aware of the themes, even though these four women in the book have, you know, they're on their own path, their own journey. Really, what they're going through is emblematic of what so many service women are going through. But with my sister, you know, and so many service women, success can be bittersweet because professional success in the military, it can be something very different. You know, success in your personal life when it comes to getting married or, you know, having family, having kids. My sister, you know, she's in her 40s. She doesn't have kids. She always wanted to have kids. She's also in a dual military marriage where her husband is also in the Army. And they were doing different tours back, you know, back-to-back to Iraq, where she was coming back from Iraq, then he was leaving for Iraq. They lived apart for a number of years, like 2.5 years, because of different jobs that they were doing and deployments. And really,
well, that's what character Bergen, the Bergen, the young lady Bergen, and her husband was Tom, I think, Tom.
Yes, Tom.
And how they, but he was very supportive. I really liked him. I really liked Tom, and I think that's, they were able to somehow work it out.
And they're a young couple, too. Yeah,
they were young, that's true.
I think one thing to remember, too, Joy, I'm glad you brought that up. The longer you stay in and the higher in rank you go, the responsibility increases, as Candace and her husband were finding out. And so that's going to also happen to Bergen and Tom. Right now, you know, they're, well, in the book, they were, you know, lieutenants. And so that's their first rank, you know, out of college.
Yeah, they had just graduated. Yeah,
they had just graduated, and but if they decide to remain in, it's going to get tougher and tougher as a dual military family, and then if they have kids on top of it, hard. It's going to be real hard.
Yeah, very hard. Well, I want to thank you so much for coming on today. We only have a couple minutes left. I want to encourage everybody to check out TanyaBianc.com. I'm going to be giving away some copies of your book, Undaunted, The Real Story of America's Service Women in Today's Military, a wonderful, wonderful book. You need to check her out. And thanks for writing Army Wives. I've watched that show. There's some wild stories on the TV show there. So you also check out Army Wives. Sorry?
It is a drama, so yeah, there's lots of drama on Army Wives.
All right, that's wonderful. I'm so happy for you and your success, Tanya. You have a great Saturday, okay?
Oh, you too. Joy, thank you so much. I truly enjoyed the conversation.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Have a great week, okay?
You too. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. I just got off the phone with author Tanya Bianc and her book, Undaunted, The Real Story of America's Servicewomen in Today's Military. Some of the issues they're dealing with, balancing being a mother, being a wife, physical stress and challenge, discrimination from their peers who think they're weak, but also trying to stay feminine, dealing with daily things like uniform and facilities not really being accommodating to them, even in when they go into the hospital, having problems, you know, how they were being treated in the areas where they're being treated, how to deal with, you know, losing a limb and things of that nature. So check out Undaunted. Follow me at Joy Keys on Twitter. Become a fan on Facebook. Look up Saturday Mornings with Joy Keys and send me an email. I would love to hear from you. My email address is SaturdaysWithJoyKeys@hotmail.com.
My daughter Cara came back from Iraq a few weeks ago. I'm so proud of her. She served and came back in one piece. But something was off. She was different. Distant. My wife told me not to push the issue, but I'm her dad.
You may not know what to say, but we can help start the conversation. Visit supportyourvet.org, brought to you by Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America and the Ad Council.